Welcome to the Resilient Mind Podcast. In this episode, you will be listening to Overcome Your Environment with Steve Harvey. Get access to the Resilient Mind Journal by clicking the link in the show notes. Enjoy.
Let me teach you something. How many of you have a dog? How many of you have ever had a dog that had a flea on him? That's everybody. You ever seen a flea? One of the smallest insects. Really small. One of the smallest insects. But for his height and size, and flea has the highest vertical leap in nature for an insect. A flea can jump, has a 36-inch vertical. A flea, man, can come 36 inches off the ground. His vertical is 36. The average person can't do that. But a flea can jump 36 inches off the ground. If you capture the flea and you put him in a mayonnaise jar and you put the lid on it, the flea know one thing. I got a 36-inch vertical. So here he go. He start jumping. But he gonna hit himself on that lid because he got that lid on it. But after a while, after getting knocked down so many times, the flea makes an adjustment. So now the flea only jumps just to where he don't get knocked back down. He got 36 vertical, but since this lid is on, his environment got him now jumping nowhere near what he can. Capture some more fleas and put them in there. They got 36 verticals, but then they start jumping. They find out they keep getting knocked down. They start doing what the other fleas is doing. Next thing you know, I got a jar full of fleas and I ain't even using a 36-inch vertical. Because they got a lid on the jar. Them fleas have babies. Them babies is born into the conditions of the environment. So now guess what? The flea is born with a 36-inch vertical, but because he see his mama and daddy and all his cousins and friends jumping just barely to the roof, you know what he do? He duplicates that behavior. The flea never reaches his potential. Until you take the top off of your mayonnaise jar, you're going to duplicate your surroundings. If you take an oak tree seed and you put it in a 2-foot pot, that seed will never become the oak tree that oak trees are capable of becoming because it's going to get stifled by the 2-foot pot. Now, check this out. Ain't nothing wrong with the seed. The seed just fell prey to the environment. You are a seed from God. God made you in his likeness. He big, he vast. Don't you allow your environment to dictate the oak tree that you become. Because ain't nothing wrong with your seed. All of y'all got this wonderful gift that he gave you at birth. All y'all got one. You better believe that now. Don't die with this gift and don't never use it. All of y'all got this wonderful gift. But you got to use it. Take your seed. Take your gift. Get away from these people that's in your life that ain't doing nothing. Get away from people in your life that's hating. Get away from your family members that ain't ever opened a business. Get away from your family members that ain't ever followed their dream. Get away from your family members that ain't never been nowhere but to the family reunion. Ain't never been to a beach. Get away from them. Get away from them. I had to do it. When I told everybody I was getting into comedy, man, oh, Lord have mercy. You can't get into comedy. You ain't even funny. How you gonna make money telling jokes? Now, in the beginning, it looked like they was right. But I never gave up. All I did was I identified this gift. I wrote all of my visions down. I read them every morning and every night. And I instilled them in my head. And every time I met somebody, they say, hey, man, what you trying to do? I would tell them one of my visions. Somebody would always say to me, you know, I know a guy that's selling them things right there. You ought to talk to him. I started scratching stuff off my vision board. My vision board is so vast now. If I showed you what was on it, you wouldn't even believe it. Because I dream so big. I want so big because the God I serve is big. He's not a small God. He's a really, really big God. He does really, really big stuff. And I expect him to do really, really big stuff for me. If he'd have done it for Oprah, if he'd have done it for the Obamas, whoever got, why I can't have this here? I'm going to do better with it than all of them to me. But why you can't have that? That's how you get what you want in life now. You don't have to believe me. But here's the deal. If you keep doing what you've been doing, you're going to keep getting what you've been getting. If I just told you a different way to go about it, you don't need no money. I just gave you some scriptures you could try and some principles. If somebody who had come from the bottom and got to this position I'm in told me that this is the way I would try it, if I was you, I would try that. I bet you it'll work.
Fear is a very, very real emotion. There's not a person alive that does not experience fear on some level. Don't you believe that for a minute? I face it all the time. Fear is so big and so prevalent today. Nothing produces more failure than does fear. It is the fear of failure that freezes people before they even start. It is the fear of failure that causes you not to want to deal with the rejection and the potential hurt that failure causes. So fear cripples you on so many levels. But how is it that some people somehow manage to get by anyway? What is it that you can do that would help you overcome whatever fear you're facing? Well, here's what I was taught, and this has helped me in my life, my career, my family, my jobs, my ambition, everything. You overcome fear with your dreams. I want y'all to listen to me closely now. You overcome fear with your dreams. Steve, how my dreams gonna make me overcome my fear? Because I want you to listen to me. Because the dream is everything. The Bible says a man without a dream or a vision shall perish. The dream is everything. See, if you have no dreams and visions, you'll perish. You will die in fear. You will die sitting somewhere in fear without dreams or visions. Dreams are the counterpoint to all fear. I want you to dream so big. I want you to want something so incredible. I want you to dream of having something that's so spectacular that if it doesn't happen, you would be miserable. Man, if I don't make this dream come true, I'm going to be miserable. I want you to dream so big that not reaching your dreams is unacceptable. You cannot live in this world without the dream and the vision. You can live in this world without your mother, your father, your brother. You can live in this world without a wife, a husband. You can live in this world without a lot of things. But what you cannot live in this world without is dreams and visions. You will perish without those things. You have to dream of something and want something. That's what keeps pushing you forward. So if you want to overcome your fear, you do it with your dreams. And here's the side note. God is in the make your dream come true business. Ain't he? He do it all the time. I'm telling you, man, God does it all the time. He makes people's dreams come true. What are you dreaming about? Explore what you're really dreaming about so you can lose your fear. You're afraid to open your business because if your business fails, you'll lose the money you saved, and you won't open your business because you might lose your job when your boss finds out. Dream bigger. Dream of what opening that business could do for you. The feeling of freedom that you would have, the extra money you could make, what you could do for your family, the things you could leave a legacy of. Maybe your dream ain't big enough. Maybe you got the dream of owning a large company. Maybe a mom and pop store. Maybe you dream of climbing the corporate ladder. Maybe you're dreaming of becoming the supervisor or the CEO of the company. You got the dream so big that if this dream don't happen, you'll be miserable. Once you can do that, you can press through your fears. You can move forward. You can get on with it. I'm telling y'all, I was taught this. Dream so big that you can't imagine your life without living your dream.
I cannot help but intertwine faith in that. So if you don't really care for the faith piece, you ain't gonna really care for me. Because I cannot tell you how I made it without telling you about God or the principles. Every principle of success
It comes from God Almighty. It's in whatever religious reading you read. That's not my business what you believe in. You just got to believe in something. I told a group earlier, I don't care what you call God. You can call God Allah, Jehovah, Yahweh. You can call him whatever you want to call him. Just call him, though. It's not in my business what you call him. I don't care. But I cannot stand here and talk to you about my road to success. I cannot inspire these young people that I tried to get to earlier today and not intertwine faith. So I'm sorry if that ain't your thing, but y'all done paid me now, so here I am. I got the money wired to my account, so here it is. Take a deep breath. I tell people all the time, you know, and I was talking to young people, and what I try to get people to understand is, I don't care who you are in this room, if you gotten to a place in your life where you felt like, you know, life should have been more for you, or you're trying to figure your life out, there's one simple way to get it done. God, when he created all of us, he never created an individual without bestowing a gift in them. And God put that gift in all of us. Some of you are gifted in teaching, networking, counseling, sharing, life-saving. Some of you are caretakers, but you're gifted. If you work in your gift, you now find your purpose in life, a real meaning for waking up in the morning. You know, a lot of people, you know people that get up and go to work in the morning, they just miserable. They hate driving to work. They hate their job. They hate their coworkers because they ain't doing what they want to do with their life. Now, that's not your fault. That's their fault. But God, when he created all of us, he gave all of us a gift. We were born with a gift at birth. God ain't made nobody and gave them a gift. Now, the thing of it is, if you stop looking at your gift as running, jumping, singing, dancing, then you can get on with your life. But so many people are pursuing their passion instead of pursuing their gift. Most of you have mastered the principles of success. But when you're talking to young people, you're talking to some people that ain't mastered that aspect yet. It's our job to teach young people the principles of success. They got to learn from your mistakes. See, I messed my life up so I could turn around and talk about it one day. I've been divorced twice. I've lost everything I own in my life twice. I lost it all again in 2005. At the end of 2005, I had $1,700. In 2005, I had made millions of dollars. I had $1,700 at the end of 2005. I've been homeless. I lived in a car for 3 years. I learned some principles, and I started applying. See, I'm a little bit different Christian than most people right here. I just happen to be a little bit more real about it, you know, I don't really know where a lot of scriptures are in the Bible. I just happen to know what's in there and what ain't in there. And I had a lady the other day on my show. I had slipped up and cussed on one of the commercial breaks because I've been working on my cussing, but that's not really working for me. I have just come to the conclusion that I'm just going to be a cussing Christian. I've been trying to get it and shake it, but it ain't working for me, man. And I accidentally cussed on a commercial break, and the lady, I could tell she was a little put off by it, and I didn't mean to. You know, I don't want to be offensive to people, but, you know, I was just talking naturally. And she just stood up and said, I have a question for you, Mr. Harvey. She said, so how's your walk going with Christ? I thought about it. I said, well, I walk tall, I walk strong with long strides and a slight limp. And that's how I walk. Now, if you ain't got no limp to your walk, congratulations. Mine has a slight limp to it. And every now and then, the flaws that I have come out. See, the difference between me and a lot of people, I happen to be famous. So my flaws have a microphone and a spotlight and the internet connected to it. You might can make your mistake at the house and don't nobody know nothing about it. But I got people watching me all day long. So what I've learned in this journey along the way of having my life as twisted as it was, I've learned the principles of success. I've learned how to get back up, how to fall and fail, get written off, say you ain't gonna ever be nothing. I've learned how to start over. I've learned how to take one heap of all my winnings and risk it on one turn or pitch and toss, lose and start again at my beginnings and never once breathe a word about my loss. Yeah, I've learned stuff like that. That's Rudyard Kipling, in case you didn't recognize that little poem. I stole that. That's when I was paying a little bit of attention in college. I didn't get the degree, but I was listening just a little bit. And when I talk to you, I try to get people to identify with these principles. The greatest thing that you could do in your life, I told the kids earlier, you know, we're a college institute, so it kind of trips people out a little bit when I say this. And I tell them how important it is to get your education, yada, 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 because we're at a college, that's what I got to say. But then I turn right around and I tell them the truth, though. The most important thing in your life ain't your education. The most important thing in your life is your dream. See, the scripture says, a man without a dream or a vision shall perish. Don't say nothing about education. Now, you got to have one if you're going to climb to certain jobs and go into corporate ladder and be in banking and be in finance and all this stuff y'all doing. But it's the dream that propels you. Look, man, we got to break this thing down real simple for people someday. Quit acting bougie like you've been rich all your life. Yeah, that's what killed me. You know, I come to these functions, everybody sit up, they lean back in their chair, they speak proper grammar, they get their nose up. You act like you had money all your life. I ain't have money all my life. I come into some money, but I've been scrapping and hustling and grinding and trying to get over. And so have you. But then you get here and you don't have no memory of that. Because now your life is fixed. And so now when you talk to young people, you don't talk to them from the perspective of you made mistakes too. You don't talk to young people like, hey, been there, done that. I smoke weed in college too, man. I know where you at. You don't want to tell them that. Yeah, Clinton smoked weed. He the president of the United States. I'm gonna probably say a lot of stuff. I already know that I'm not coming back next year. That's clear. I ain't got no problem. See, that's why I give my money wide to me. Because I already know I'm going to mess around and say something. I'm going to throw somebody into something. Because I see a couple of looks on y'all's face right now. But I don't really care. I'm out of here. I'm going to go get on this jet. I'm going to go down here. My wife down in Miami, man. I'm going to go sleep with my wife tonight. I don't care what y'all do. I was telling you about your gift. This is how you save yourself a lot of trouble. Now, this may apply to some adults in this room. Maybe not. Your gift is the thing that you do the absolute best with the least amount of effort. That's your God-given gift. You ain't got to trip on it, wonder about it. It's what you do better than anything else. Now, whether you've chosen to make that your life's work or not, that's your choice. But I got news for you. If you don't ever pursue that, you ain't gonna ever be happy. It's some unhappy people in this room today, because there's some people in here doing what people expect them to do and doing what was required of them, and they just got locked into it. Now you got bills and the family and you don't really want to pursue your dream. So now you got the job and you just gonna ride it all the way out. There ain't nothing wrong with that. If your job is what you gifted at doing, this man is gonna retire this year, but he's been in the education of young people's minds. He's been shaping young people's minds for 30 years like that. That's what he was gifted to do. If you're sitting up in here and you ain't happy and you in misery, it's because you ain't pursued your gift. And I'm telling them young people over there with them blue shirts on and them striped ties, find out what your gift is and pursue it with everything in you. Because ain't nothing worse than getting a degree and you don't even want it after you get it. Because a degree ain't nothing but a piece of paper hanging on a wall. Now, it signifies that you have the ability to complete a task, but your life is made up of what you do with it. Life is 10% what happens. It's 90% of what you do about it. You got to do something with your life, man, that makes your heart beat in the morning when you wake up. See, people ask me all the time, how you do all these jobs, Steve? Because I like all my jobs. You cut your radio on 240 times a year. I do a 4-hour live radio show. How you do that every morning? Well, the main reason is they got a nice check, but other than that, I wake up in the morning, I give people some inspiration, I play music, and I tell jokes. Okay, boom, I like doing that. Then I go to a talk show. I live in Chicago 8 months out of the year, 34 weeks. I tape 180 talk shows in Chicago. How you do that every day? Because I love doing it. Then I go to Atlanta. I live in Atlanta, and in 9 weeks, I tape 200 episodes of Family Feud. Man, how you tape all them shows? Once again, they have a check attached to this. But I love what I do. If you cut your TV on, it's obvious that I love what I do. I'm always smiling because God has given me the life of my dreams because I'm living in the gift he gave me. If you live in your gift, man, it changes your life. Do something about your gift. Listen to me. I don't care what job you got now. If it's something that really burns on the inside of you, you ought to go do that. I don't care how old you are. How come you think Kentucky Fried Chicken, how come you think that man on the side, why you think he old? Because his recipe got discovered when he was 68. That ain't the picture of the colonel when he was 35. But he been frying chicken. You know, you can't just wake up and start frying chicken. He been frying chicken with this secret recipe for years. It took him a long time for it clicked, but he kept frying chicken, man, till he became the biggest chicken joint in the world. You can't go nowhere and don't see Kentucky Fried Chicken. That ain't real chicken. But when he was living, it was real chicken, though. It really was chicken. It was the actual parts. If you peel that skin off that Kentucky Fried Chicken, you're in for a surprise. It don't look nothing like. But he hit it. When is it too late to hit it? When is it really too late to hit the jackpot? When is it? When you're 60, that's too late. You don't want to be rich then? What, just 65, too late for you to be rich? When is it too late to hit it? Man, put some spark in your life. Have something to wake up about to make your heart beat in the morning. Have a joyous spirit when you wake up in the morning. Here's another principle of success. I'm going to tell you what rich people talk about all the time. You know what rich people talk about all the time? They talk about money all the time. All the principles of success is in the Bible. See, a man is as he thinks. So, what you think, excuse the grammar, but that's what you eat. Don't think it make better sense. Bad grammar makes better sense sometimes. If a man is as he thinketh, then what you think is what you is. That make real good sense to me. See, yeah. I like to keep it where people remember stuff I say. So rich people, you know what they do? They talk about money. Now, when you talk about money around people, they get tight because they don't want to hear the money. Well, money's not everything, and money can't buy you happiness. They ain't got no money. Money might not buy you happiness, but it park you right in front of Happy House. You can get out, ring doorbell, see if Happy Home. There's nothing wrong with money. People, so many things have been said over the years. When rich people get together, they talk about money. They talk about business all the time. There's nothing wrong with that. See, we go to church and we learn the wrong thing. You know what messed me up, man? When I was little, I went to church in Cleveland, you know, and a preacher would always say, he says, hard for a rich man to get into the kingdom of heaven as it is for a camel to get through the eye of a needle. Now, me and the rest of the ignorant members, we thought that you was trying to take a needle with a sewing thread and push a camel through it. All the people in my church collectively decided they didn't want to be rich because they wanted to go to heaven. I was sitting there 10 years old. I wasn't really buying into this because I was trying to figure out how I was going to get this camel into this hole. Because I didn't know what they was talking about because I wanted to be rich because this poverty was, I was allergic to it. I itched all the time. I just came from being poor. You know, you just find just be digging in yourself sometimes because you're poor. Poverty is uncomfortable. First of the month come, your whole butt tighten up. You, just like somebody squeezing lemon juice down the crack of your behind because it's the first of the month. All this stuff is due. Shop. That's your butt. Shop. Just tightening up. Because you ain't got the money. Why would I not want no money? I live in the hood. I want out. I need money to get out. But at my church, they say it's as hard for a rich man to get into the kingdom of heaven as it is for a camel to get through the eye of a needle. So I bought into that. I was about 30, well, almost 38. I was in Hollywood. I was driving down the street. I ran up in the Donnie McClurkin. He was coming out of the studio on Sunset. I was in the truck smoking a cigar. I saw Donnie. I said, hey, man, what's happening? He said, hey, Steve, man. This was one of the first years I had hosted Celebration of Gospel. And I was going to quit hosting Celebration of Gospel because I didn't like the gospel community because they didn't like me. You know, backstage, they'd be saying stuff like, I don't know why he is hosting our gospel show. He ain't saved. I don't know what y'all talking about. I'm here for the check. Let's be clear about this. I've been in church my whole life, but, you know, I got, I ain't living no perfect life, and I wasn't, but, You know, that was my life at the time. And I was going to quit, and I was telling Donnie I was thinking about quitting. He said, man, why are you going to quit? I was telling him, man, I said, man, I'm just confused right now, man. I said, I don't get it. I said, man, if I think about going back to church, man, but I want to go to heaven, but man, I'm finna start making this money, Donnie, and it just don't jive with Christianity. He said, what you mean? And I told him what the preacher, that it's hard for a man to get through the kingdom of heaven as is for a camel through the eye of a needle. So Donnie looked at me a little confused because, you know, he a pastor. And I was just telling him, you know, but I'm trying to find a way to get the camel in the needle. He said, Steve, that's not what it means. I said, what does it mean? He says, in the Middle East, a needle is an ark that is stuck in the sand that looks like a wishbone on a chicken. And they have them to entryways sometimes. And when a camel approaches the needle, in order for the camel to get through the needle, he has to kneel and crawl through the needle. And then the camel gets back up. He said, that's what God meant. I said, Donnie, you mean they ain't talking about a sewing needle? He said, fool, you can't put a camel through a sewing needle. After that, I said, I got to go make me some money. I just humbled myself before God like I'm going through the needle and he ought to let me in. But I'm going in with some money, though. I became friends with Oprah Winfrey because obvious reasons. We ain't going to keep saying that, but she's a very successful woman. She's a very kind person. Everybody get a bad rap on the internet. You know, she thinks she did too. Well, you know, a lot of people shoot that. The thing about haters, man, haters kick you when they down and they throw at you when you're up. And they just do it all damn day. They're just haters. You got them on your job. You got them at your church. You got them. They just hate it. They just hate us. Haters because they ain't got nothing else to do. They want to be you. They can't. So here come the hate. And I don't mind haters as long as they throwing because I'm usually up. You can throw up at me. I don't address you. And I was talking to Oprah one time, and she said, I did a life class with her this past year. And she said, Steve, I never knew you had a vision board. She said, you believe in that? And this is the first time we had a serious conversation. I said, Oprah, how am I not going to believe in that? Every successful person I know has a vision board, or they have their goals written down. You can't do it without writing it down. When you write it down, it's a symbol of faith. See, I was telling this story earlier about writing it down. You know, teacher, we were in the sixth grade, and asked us to write on a piece of paper. We came in from summer, what you want to be when you grow up. So everybody filled out the paper. You had to put your name on it, had to write this one thing in 1968. So I wrote, I want to be on TV. Because nobody had told me I couldn't. I was 10. My vision was wide open. So I wrote, I want to be on TV. She collected all the papers. She started going around the room, naming everybody's name, had everybody stand up. And she read what they wanted to be. Barbara wanted to be a nurse. Johnny wanted to be a basketball player. Robert wanted to own a gas station. Cindy wanted to be a doctor. She got to me, she waited last. Now, I had never gotten a gold star before all of my years of school. And she asked me to stand. And when I stood, she said, little Stevie, come to the front of the class. And I'm thinking to myself, this is it. This is the gold star moment. I've been waiting 10 years for this. I ain't never got a star before. This is the day. So I started walking to the front. I'm skinny. I got my brother's clothes on because we were poor. I got up there and she said, Steve, let me ask you something. What did you write on your paper? I said, I want to be on TV. She said, and why did you write that on your paper? I said, because that was our assignment for today. And then she said, what you write that on the paper for? Now I'm thinking to myself, judging by the tone of this conversation, this might not be the gold star moment I thought it was going to be. So I started cowering down. And she said, so why did you write it on the paper? And I said, because you asked us to. Voices really softened. She said, do you know anybody on TV? I said, no. Anybody in this school ever been on TV? I said, no. Any of your relatives been on TV? I said, no, ma'am. She said, take this paper. I'm going to call your mama. When you go home, I'm going to tell her you being a smart aleck in this class. Now you take this paper and you come back with something more believable on it. So she pinned a note on me and I had to go home. My mama was waiting on me because she called the house. So my mother said, what you doing up at that school being a smart aleck? I said, mama, I just did what the teacher told me to. She read the note. She said, what you write this on your paper for? I said, because the lady asked me what I wanted to be. I won't be on TV. She said, I'm telling your daddy when you get home. Well, my father was the executioner. My mother was the warden, and he was the executioner. And I knew when he got home, I was going to get my ass whooped. So, excuse me, I'm sorry, that slipped out. I didn't mean to say that. I was going to get my butt whipped. And so when my father came home, she told my father, look what Steve wrote on this paper. So he read the paper. He said, what's going on here? Said, Steve up at that school act like a smart ass. That teacher done asked him what he wanted to be, and he done put, I want to be on TV. My father read the paper. He said, what's wrong with that? I started thinking, uh-oh, a reprieve. So he said, boy, go in your room. I'll be in there in a minute. And I got my spankings in the room, so I went on in there getting ready. Him and my mother had an argument. My father came in the room. He said, boy, what you write this on your paper for? I said, because I want to be on TV. He said, what she want you to write on the paper? I said, like a basketball player or a policeman. He said, put that on paper. Take it up to the school and give it to that dream-killing heifer. So I write it. He said, now take your paper. He said, before you go to bed tonight. Now, this is my father now with a third-grade education. My father was a sharecropper in Alabama. He said, read your paper every night before you go to bed. And when you wake up in the morning, read your paper before you go to school. Read your paper every day and read your paper every night. I took my paper up to the school and I turned it in. It took me till I was 38 years old. But I finally got on TV.
Thank you for tuning in. Continue strengthening your mind by listening to our other episodes.